Hey everyone, I am Reva and just want to take a moment and thank you for listening to our studio podcast. Although we are here in Greenville, South Carolina, we are grateful for your support to see the message of Jesus go out all over the world. In case you are not aware, we have a YouTube channel, which you can find the link in our podcast bio. We hope you enjoy this week's talk and it encourages you and it helps you to be the human God designed you to be. So with that, let's get right to it.
All right. Good afternoon. Please be seated. Hope you're all doing well. It's good to be back. I was gone last Sunday. I was in LA going to a friend of mine conference event, but my daughter lives in LA. So now I have free lodging in LA and she had a little cute little studio apartment. And she's awesome because she said, "Dad, I got all these restaurants booked out," because she knew I was paying the bill. So we went to all these. I continued to be sugar daddy in her mind. And I knew she had the studio apartment. She's got a bed and a couch and a studio and then a little kitchen and bathroom off. And I said, "Can I stay with you instead of going to a hotel?" She said, "Oh, I'd love for you to stay with me." I said, "But I want to sleep on the couch." And she says, no, you're sleeping in the bed. I'm sleeping on the couch." So we got in this big tech argument back and forth a couple weeks prior. And like the day before, I called her and said, "Selah, I'm sleeping on the couch. You stay in your bed. I don't want to disrupt." She said, "Dad, it's not an option. You're sleeping in my bed and I'm sleeping on the couch." I said, "Fine." So I gave up. So I roll in. I cleaned all the sheets, got it all nice for you. She had her bed on the couch. I was like, "Okay, this is fine." But then she started like bringing me glasses of water. I'm like, "Wow, this is nice. My baby girl taking care of me now." And then that night, I went to the conference event, and I'm coming back. It's about 30 minutes away. And she said, "Dad, I want you to park in my parking spot." Now, this is L.A., so when you have an apartment, the biggest value is, do you have your own parking spot? If not, you're trying to find parking within blocks of where you live. She said, "I found a parking spot on the street for me. I want you to park in my parking spot." I'm like, you know, this makes sense because you raise a child, you spend crazy amounts of money, you are pouring your life into them. Yes, I deserve a parking spot, glasses of water, and her bed. So I finally just embraced, like, you know what? Yeah, what else? You want to rub my, I asked you, "I would like for you to rub my feet." That's when she drew the line. She said, "Dad, that's not an option." So I didn't get that. Maybe next time I'll get her to rub my feet. So had a great time in LA, great time seeing her. And we just had a good time and just really enjoyed it. And I'm really looking forward to today. Whenever I miss a Sunday here, which is very rare, I'm like, I just want to get back. I want to see our people. I want to see us. And I want to be in God's presence with you. Just want to be here. And I'm looking forward to today because I'm going to talk about something that I realized I haven't talked about in a very long time. I actually can't really recall. If my memory served me right, it was 24, 25 years ago. So what we're going to talk about today, I talk about indirectly, but today I want to talk directly about it. So if you have your Bible, get it open to the book of Ephesians. If you have an app, if you don't have an app, download it quickly. I want you to read the scripture with me or scoot next to somebody that has a Bible or an app on the phone. Go to Ephesians chapter 2. We're going to read a few verses there. Then we're going to go back to chapter 1 and read a few verses there. So Ephesians chapter 2, verse 19. "Consequently, you are no longer foreigners and strangers, but fellow citizens with God's people, and also members of his household, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Christ Jesus himself as the chief cornerstone. In him, the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple in the Lord. And in him, you too are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit." Go back to chapter 1 now. We're going to start in verse 22. We're going to read two verses right here. Ephesians chapter 1, verse 22. "And God placed all things," say all things,
"all things,
under his feet and appointed him to be head over everything for the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills everything in every way." Recently, I was in a conversation with some friends and recording a new podcast, and there were two words we were discussing: mavericks and pioneers. And they were asked, like, we were all discussing what we think a Maverick is. We were thinking what a pioneer was. And my description of Maverick summed up was kind of like a bulldog, someone that just gets stuff done, and they just are a force to deal with. And then we talked about pioneers. And pioneers, for me, resonate more deeper than a Maverick. Pioneer is someone that is more finesse, more precision and accuracy. A pioneer is someone that can actually see a reality that doesn't exist yet. And they actually feel pushed and pulled into the future because they see something. It's almost like an augmented reality. You see the world around you, but superimposed on top of that is another possibility. And pioneers are pulled in this direction. And that's the thing for me is when I look at the church, when I look at the body of Christ, when I look at all of it, and for me, I've been raised around the church. I've been in it pretty much the entirety of my life. And my relationship with the church has evolved over the years. And there have been great seasons. And there's been some really rough seasons. And then everything in between. But this idea of what wakes me up every day is this superimposed, augmented reality that isn't actuality yet, but it's coming. I stay up late at night. Some nights I don't sleep because I can see it, I can sense it, I can feel it. Very little things in life get me as excited as what I can see. And this is what gets me up. This is what motivates me. This is what reminds me when I go through crisis and tragedy that that's not the end, because there's a future, a possibility because of what I can see. There's whole thing around church, and it's one reason why I couldn't walk away from the church. I had an option not long ago to just walk away. But I couldn't. I felt like it would be premature for me to do something else in this next season of my life. I felt like I can't walk away. And I had this deep, deep, deep sense I'm not done. So this vision of a future of the bride of Christ and this thing that Jesus is building, what he called the body, the thing that Jesus is the chief cornerstone. You see, all I ever wanted to do in life would be a pro athlete. That was it. I just wanted to be in sport in any capacity, and specifically baseball. So I gave my life to baseball as a young boy, and I played and I excelled at it and I was good at it. I'm small, but I'm really quick. And I was a catcher, so I could throw people out on the bases like no one's business. That was my specialty, just quick and fast. I've lost some speed over the years, but in my mind, I'm still as quick. You know how that is. You're like, I feel like I'm 18. And you find out you're not near anything like you were. So I just don't play anymore, but I know that I could still play. You know, that relationship. And you see, my parents were very much on board with my ambition to be an athlete. I'm sixth generation pastor on my dad's side, and I'm fourth generation Christian on my mom's side. So I had five options growing up: apostle, prophet, pastor, teacher, evangelist. If you're unfamiliar with that, those five descriptors, it's in the Bible, and it's different gifts that God gives to people and different roles. And that's a full-on Christian joke right there. I realize that. But in all seriousness, that was never the five option. My parents raised me this way. Son, what do you dream about doing? What is your passion? That's what we want to do. And sports was it. I never once felt pressure, never once felt or had a conversation with my parents about doing anything to do with the church. They were like, you love sports, and we love it just as much as you. I remember the day my dad bought a camcorder. Some of you remember these old cameras you'd buy and you put on your shoulder with the VHS tape? Did anybody know what I'm talking about in here? Okay. And then over time, it got smaller and smaller. And I remember when my dad bought a camcorder, and he's on a pastor's salary, which... do the math. It doesn't work. But somehow he scrounged up enough money to buy this camcorder because he was like, son, I don't want to miss any of your games. I want to record them all. And obviously my brother was younger and my sister, they kind of did their sports and different after school stuff. But I remember my dad yelling from the stand, that's my son. That's my son. So I grew up with this strong backing and support of being in sports for as long as I wanted. But as I left my teen years, and as sports began to kind of dwindle out, which was a shock to my system because I was 120% in, and then almost overnight, I was like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. It was really odd. It was a shock to my everything. I was like, I don't even know why I'm on this earth anymore. I mean, that was literally how shocking it was. You know, as a mature 19-year-old. I love talking to late teens, early 20-year-olds. I don't know why I'm alive. I'm like, you barely lived yet. But I remember that feeling. I remember that feeling at 19, like my life should end now. You know, I don't want to do this anymore. And I was in that space. And as I just kind of followed the breadcrumbs through life, I could tell the breadcrumbs were going back into the church. And I was never anti-church. You see, it just wasn't what I wanted to do. And I was like, okay, I'm fine. I'm fine going back into the church as long as I'm not the lead pastor. My, oh my, have things changed. You see, I grew up, it's a unique experience when you grow up in the church. It's a unique experience when you're what they call a PK, which is an abbreviation for pastor's kid. It's a hard dynamic to describe if you're not familiar with it. It's a very real dynamic. It's a very small sector of the human population. And it's a very, you talk to any PK, you can almost smell each other from a mile away. I mean, it's literally like, oh, I know that look. You see, my upbringing was unique. It was school dances. Was not allowed to go to a school dance. I want you to feel pity for me. School dances were considered of the devil. And some of you know what I'm talking about because this was your upbringing. And so we weren't allowed to go to school dances. So our youth group would create what's called alternatives, which is always inferior to what you're trying to copy. You know how that works? But we were convinced that alternatives were way funner, way better than what was going on at the high school campus that night at Friday Night Dance. Now, I could never tell you what would better because I never got to experience the other, so I had nothing to compare it to. But if I looked at my friends, I thought they're having way more fun than playing board games, eating a lot of candy in someone's house. That was also called alternatives. I got lectured about video games. Remember when the first Nintendo came out and Mario Brothers came out with it? This is before Super Mario Brothers. This was the base Mario Brothers. And we finally got a Nintendo, and my brother and I were so excited, but my dad was deeply concerned about the Eastern religious influence on the game. Did you know that Buddhism had deeply influenced Mario Brothers? I didn't, but my dad apparently believed it did. So we got page by page lecture through the manual of how to play the game. And he would point out, you see this right here? How it says lives? You only have one life. But this game wants you to believe you have more than one life. You thought you had it bad. Sure, Dad. Yes, Dad. We only have one life. I get it. Okay. Can we play now? Not yet. Flip the page. And he went literally line by line through the whole manual to make sure we knew that this game did not have Christian biblical influence. Music, music was always a war with mom and dad. So MC Hammer comes out with his album. Anybody know MC Hammer in here? Okay. And I was convinced this one would make the Christian music cut line. I don't know if you know, there was a cut line between Christian music and secular music. There was a cut line. And we were not allowed to listen to secular music. It was just like, that. Again, that was associated with the devil. And so Christian music. So I thought MC Hammer would make the cut because he has a song about prayer. You should get on Spotify later and just listen to some of his stuff. It's so good. So my dad, who knew nothing about what was good and okay to listen to, but I had two uncles that were both youth pastors. And my uncle that lived in the Bay Area, he was the most up to speed on what music we were allowed to listen to. And so my dad said, call Uncle Greg. So I called Uncle Greg and said, Uncle Greg, please let me listen to MC Hammer. If you say okay, then my parents will let me listen to it. So we had this long discussion. I said, remember that song about prayer? Read the lyrics, man. It's like full on, you got to pray or you won't make it through the day. I mean, it's just this whole thing. I'm going to go on the way home today. I'm going to put MC Hammer in. So he said, I'll call you back. I think it was 1 week or 2 weeks later, he called me and said, sorry, Eric, doesn't make the cut. You see, I grew up in a very, very, that was my upbringing. In fact, that my parents said, if you lift your hand in worship on Sunday, we will buy you ice cream after church. So every Sunday, eyes closed, I left it up for the whole time. I don't want just scoops. I want a full-on banana split. So the longer you left it up, for some reason in my head, that meant I could get whatever ice cream I wanted. And people would always get upset at my mom later in life. They'd say, you can't bribe. You're not supposed to bribe your kids. And her response is, but look how it worked out for me. She had a point. You see, I have to be honest. My relationship with the church is complex. You may not know that, but it is complex. It's kind of like that stage in life where you're raising kids and you're apologizing to everybody for the mess they're making. I'm so sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry. We should probably go now. I'm so embarrassed. And then you get to the point where your response to the parent is so immature. Now you're apologizing for people how you're acting. See, that's my relationship with church. Some days I'm super proud. I'm like, this is it. Church is boss. Church is, and then other days I'm like, I can't. I am so embarrassed. No, I'm not a pastor anymore. I quit. Nope. Don't want to be associated with that thing. So I actually have this complex relationship with church. It's just the dynamic of it. Especially when you've been around it for so long. But I've realized that even when I had an opportunity to walk away from it, I couldn't. Because I'm deeply in love with what's possible. I'm deeply in love with what it is, and I'm more in love with the idea of what it's becoming. Some of you need to hear this today. It's time for you to be the church again. You also need to know it's time for you to be a part of what Jesus is building. It's really remarkable when you look at church history and you look at how many wars, how many dictators, how many authoritarian leaders, how many world systems have been designed to actually destroy the church. From day one, it existed. And yet today, Christianity is the largest sector of faith and religion in the world. What did that tell us? The more pressure, the more accusation, the more persecution, it actually amplifies it. You see, when the main metaphor of your faith revolved around death, it is a guarantee that the more pressure it experiences, the more attempt to diminish it will actually propel it even farther and even further. So understand that our faith actually does best under pressure. It does best when there's persecution. I'm going to read a verse to you. You can write it down for your note. But in Matthew 16:18, Jesus is talking to Peter and he says this, "And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church. And the power of death shall not prevail against it." So we've got this moment where it's a beautiful moment. I encourage you to read the whole story. It's on the heels of this amazing encounter with Jesus and Peter. It's phenomenal. It's so inspiring. But in this follow-up comment, he said, "Peter, I'm going to build my church, and the gates of Hades, the enemy, will not prevail against it." The word church here is actually a word that we call ekklesia. And ekklesia is actually a word that's actually quite a non-religious word. It's actually a word Jesus would often take words that were non-religious or, in our word, doesn't have any Christian roots, and he would purify them, he would redeem them, and he would elevate them to another place. Another word that is that apostle. Apostle is not a Christian word. It's actually a word in the context of a political government taking over culture of the nation, and an apostle was someone the government would send in to culturize the people. And Jesus said, I like that idea, and he pulled it in, and he uses it to talk about what he wants to do at the church. So this is what Jesus would do. He would take words and redeem them or redefine them for kingdom purposes. And ekklesia is one of those words. Ekklesia means an assembly. And in Greek culture, an ekklesia, the idea was this, that you got together to discuss and determine policies and politics and the ways of government. So Jesus takes this word that's used in culture and pulled in. He said, Peter, I'm going to build my ekklesia. And the enemy will never be able to prevail against it. So the idea of an assembly is not our idea. The idea of gathering is not a man-made human idea. The idea of church is something that God actually set forth. So what we're doing here is not something that somebody thought up a few thousand years ago and thought, you know what, we should just line some chairs up and talk and pray and worship and do all this. No, this was Jesus' idea. Now, I understand there are people in this room and people outside of this room. You might have different preferences on how the assembly takes place. The problem is we moralize our preferences when it comes to church. Well, that's not really the church. Church is when we meet in homes. I'm just going to say this. There are so many different models and expressions of ecclesia, and I'm so glad there's a million options. Because I would frankly get so bored if there was only one model of ecclesia. And what I've noticed is a lot of people complain about one model, so they create another model. And guess what? They end up with the same dynamic and issue, the model they rejected. So whenever you react to a problem, you will create another set of problems. So whatever your preferences are for the ecclesia, for the church, you can have them, just don't moralize them and don't spiritualize them. Because the idea of gathering, whether two or three or thousands, was not our idea. It was Jesus' idea. We actually are not the one that came up with the idea and the one that actually built the church, but he's invited us to participate in what he is doing on the earth. In this conversation, we often get this kind of fantasy idea around church. Like, man, the early church. We read the book of Acts. We read Ephesians. You're like, man, the early church is where it was at. Look at them. They're eating together, praying together, people getting saved and baptized. And we've got this image, this fantasy idea that everything was amazing and awesome. It was. But I want to propose to you, go read 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians. There were some huge dysfunctions in the church. Massive dysfunction, incredible sexual immorality. If you think it's bad today in 2024, you need to go back to the Roman Greek empires and study how far they took sexual freedom. It was atrocious. Today is light compared to what they experimented with. So this idea that the early church was great and perfect, there's no issue, is a fantasy. Incredible sexual immorality. Racism was running hardcore through the early church. Hardcore through the disciples. You had people suing each other, going to court, taking care of matters outside of the construct of a Christian habits and practices. So if you think the early church had it dialed and there was no dysfunction, you're mistaken. It's a fantasy because it was broken and dysfunction then as it is now. Are you with me this afternoon? And I realize this is the hard conversation because some of us, like, I've been so hurt by the church. I've been so wounded by the church. And we've got this growing number of people. They say 47% of churchgoers express they don't want to go to church because that's where they've experienced the most pain, the most trauma. It's staggering. It's defeating. It's deflating. But all I want to do today is recognize this is not a new dynamic in church. You know why this exists? Because there's humans involved. I was thinking this week, actually, about fruits of the Spirit. I love fruits of the Spirit. The Bible talked about the gifts of the Spirit, and then talked about the fruits of the Spirit. Here's a few of them. Joy, peace, long-suffering, patience. I mean, it's just self-control. It just goes on and on. What I've noticed, there is no way on earth to see if you have those fruits of the Spirit if there's no other humans involved. It's impossible. You can't tell if you have patience until you get another human involved in your life. You can feel like, man, I am the most patient person on earth, and yet you live all by yourself. You don't interact with humanity. You go to methodical. You have a cup of coffee, earphones on, and you just plug away in your own life. You go to the gym, and your only conflict is someone's using the machine you want to use. And man, I got so much patience. I'll tell you what. You don't know if you have patience until you've been around some people. That's it. Long-suffering. Long-suffering is another one. Man, I can suffer long. No one can talk about being long-suffering until you have a few decades under your belt under the same complex dynamic issues. It's amazing how many people are inspired to teach on theory. I've seen people move from one season to the next season, and a month into their new season, they're coming out with books, TikToks, and podcasts. I'm like, wait, those are all theories. It's worked for a month, but I want to see if it works for 20 years. I always told myself, do not write books on parenting until you've raised kids. We've now raised kids. I'm like, I am definitely not writing a book on parenting right now. You see, we've got to understand there are theories that are amazing on paper. They work for a season, but the fruit of the Spirit can only be true if it's tested in other humans for long periods of time. Joy. I mean, talk about joy. Joy is one of the most complex fruits of the Spirit. Because we think joy is when something amazing happens. But Jesus and Apostle Paul introduces us to this dimension of joy that doesn't depend on circumstances. That's the joy I want to learn about. But you can't actually have an opportunity to access that dimension of joy until you have some circumstances that are the exact opposite of joy. So if you've been hurt by the church, and if you think I've not been hurt by the church, you are also greatly mistaken. My greatest pain in my life, outside of losing my mother a year and a half ago, has to do with the church hurting me deeply. Betrayal. Embarrassment. I mean, I could go down the list. And I love when people say, you don't know my story. You're right. You don't know mine. Our stories are so different, and it was never designed to be the same story. So I understand. I have deep empathy for anyone in this room that has experienced trauma, that experienced hurts or wounding specifically by the church. You will not get a cocky attitude toward you, but you will get, hey, guess what? There is a time where you have to choose to move forward. There is a time. And what's fascinating is I don't understand God in a lot of ways. Actually, I feel like I have more doubt and unbelief as I get older. I don't know if you've noticed that. I don't doubt the existence of God, but I have so many more questions that I never had. I'm like, you know what? I'm just glad there's a heaven, and now my goal is to get there. But the fascinating thing about God is God had this idea of perfection, this idea of building a body called the church, an ecclesia. But the material he chooses to use for this is imperfect people. I don't know how that works. Even when God comes in your life, how many of you notice you still got some imperfections? I think some of us said yes to Jesus because we thought, oh, he's going to get rid of all these imperfections and we're going to be fine. And we get saved. We're like, why did everything feel the same? One more week. Okay. All right. One more week. We raise our hand again the next time. And all of a sudden we're like, why did everything feel the same? See, the difference is you want somebody to get your hands on you, to pray for you, to remove all this. And Jesus is like, I want to take you through the journey of life. So he decides to use imperfect people to build something that's perfect. That mathematical equation does not exist in human reasoning or human logic. But that mathematical equation works when you look at the beauty of grace and mercy. And what's funny is we often don't like being around imperfect people. And we all know by now God uses imperfect people to shape us and grow us and cause us to mature. But did you know you are also the imperfect person that God is using to grow somebody else? I don't know if you ever thought about that. Like, no, not me. I've got all my ducks in a row. No, I guarantee you there are people in your life right now that can't stand you. And God is using you. He's using all your imperfections to make it harder for someone else. Just sit on that for just a second. Some of you are like, I never thought about that. And that person could be right next to you right now. Could be your spouse. Could be your significant other. It could be your friend. It could be your child. Could be your parents. I want you to understand something. We have this fantasy idea that everything's wrong with everybody out here, not realizing we're actually the same kind of person. We are imperfect. There are so many blind spots in our life. There are so many areas in our life that God is actually using those imperfections in your life to help someone else grow in patience, long-suffering, joy, peace, kindness. The list just goes on and on. So this idea of church is something God decided to build. And one of the dynamic that I'm running up against, even in my own life, and because I interact with so many people, is self-preservation has become a really important thing in our day and age. I've been hurt so much, I'm going to self-preserve myself and protect myself from ever experiencing the opportunity to get hurt again. And yet we're longing for authenticity, intimacy, and vulnerability. Our soul is longing for this, but we preserved ourselves enough where it's not even an option. You see, self-preservation is good, especially when you go back thousands and thousands of years where you realize you're not on the top of the food chain and there are animals out there that want to kill you. So self-preservation is really great there. Like, it's just survival. But my concern is that we've gotten so self-preserved in modern day that we never get out of it. Our boundaries are so strong, are so high, and so thick that no one's allowed near this place deep in my soul again, because I am never going to let someone hurt me again. Guess what? You'll never be the person your soul longs to be, because you've just removed all the opportunities to grow and to be the man that you long to be and to be the woman you dream to be. Guess what? The church is one of the greatest incubators for growth. The church is one of the greatest incubators for creativity. The church is one of the greatest vehicles for God to build something in you that you can never do by yourself. So be careful. And I understand some of us, you've been hurt to a point, you need a season where you need to just go off to the side. I understand that. But I feel like I'm supposed to say this out loud. Some of you have been in that season and you've chosen to stay there. And I'm here today to say, guess what? It's time for you to embrace and participate in the church that Jesus is building. It's time for you to come out and give yourself an opportunity to find out if your faith is actually a real thing. The other thing, too, are you guys still with me? Take a few more minutes here. The other thing, too, is we don't realize churches are actually very similar to a hospital. Churches actually have an underlying theme. It's not the whole picture, but it's actually a part of the dynamic. And years ago, Candace and I were youth pastors at the time, and we were experiencing some beautiful things God doing in the northern part of California, in Redding and Weaverville. We were kind of going back and forth, and just amazing things happening, people getting saved, people getting set free and healed. I mean, it was just, it's what you would call God is moving. And we had a young gal in our youth group at the time, and she was 16, 17, somewhere in there. And she comes from a really beautiful family, really dear friends of ours at the time. And she, some days she was really devoted to Jesus, and other days it was like she forgot she was devoted to Jesus. So her life is back and forth, but deep in the essence of who she was, we realized, okay, this, she really wants to follow Jesus. And when you're in a small town of 3,000 people, sometimes your next option is leave. Like, just get out and go somewhere else. So she applied to go to this ministry school that was down in Southern California, and I was her reference. So I got a call from the school, and they said, Pastor Eric, you're on your reference for this person, and would you mind just telling us a little bit about her? So I told them all that. I explained, I'm not gonna sugarcoat this. This is where she's at. But as her pastor, Candace and I, we feel the next step for her to get out of this environment and get around other people that are committed to following Jesus, and she'll get caught right up in that momentum. So we're telling her all that, and also letting her know that this is some decisions that she's making that aren't great. And the person on the phone replied and said, oh, I thought God was moving there. And I was like, I don't know where that had nothing to do with what I said. Then I realized, oh, in her mind, when God's moving, there's no problems. When God is moving, there's no brokenness. In fact, I'm going to propose to you, when God is moving, there's more brokenness. Why? Because when you know you can get healed, guess where you go? You go to hospitals. You go to places that have hope of what's actually possible. So church is not a place where everything buttoned down, the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. It's actually the opposite. You can't find the I and you can't find the T. And this is the vehicle that God decides to create. This is the container, the incubator he decides to create. So you can become someone that's no longer broken, They're no longer living in their past, but moving into the future and living from a reality of redemption and grace and mercy, and you did nothing for it. This is how God decides to do it. So remember, churches are similar to hospitals. The more help you have available, the more broken people will show up. So if you're looking for a steady, stable church environment, I would propose maybe God's not very active there. So I'd much rather have people coming in that are longing to be set free, that are longing to be hope-filled when they have no hope, that are longing to be loved, that have dynamics that are hard to explain and articulate. I'd much rather have that environment. So if you're looking for stable, steady, there's nothing chaotic or nothing confusing, everything just nice and ironed out, that scares me so deeply that we would ever want that kind of environment. I feel like today I'm here to say this. Jesus is asking you to move into a season to help build what he wants to build. If you have your Bible, we're going to do one more little piece here, and then I'm going to wrap this up. 1 Samuel chapter 22. 1 Samuel 22. I find it difficult to read these beautiful passages and not get the context. And so I'm going to ask if you would help me tonight by reading 1 Samuel 22, at least a few chapters around it, just to get some context. But at this point, this is about a young man named David who'd been anointed king, but now he's a fugitive. All the nations are against him, and he's in a pretty dark spot in life, and he's running for his life. And so we pick up in chapter 22, verse 1, and we're going to read the first two verses. David therefore departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. So when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. And everyone who was in distress, everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was discontented gathered to him. So he became captain over them, and there were about 400 men with him. This is a really fascinating passage. Could you notice that everybody's in debt? Everybody is in distress, and everybody is discontent. It's amazing how you always find people at the same frequency of what's going on in your soul. I have the unique privilege of people coming up to me, and they say something like this: hey, listen, I have some concerns. And there's a lot of people share the same concerns. I'm like, I'm sure. I think you're right. But what we don't realize is that you actually attract the wrestles that you are wrestling with. Let me put it simply. Sad people attract sad people. Wealthy people attract wealthy people. Happy people attract happy people. Discontented people attract discontented people. Water attracts water. So I just want to just say this, just for our church, for our studio family here. Represent yourself, not a bunch of people, because you found people that have the same frequency as you. It's amazing how it worked. I've seen people leave cities, go to another city, and I'll see them later in life. I'm like, oh, they found the same kind of people they left. Why? Because the frequency is the same. So understand that the frequency in your soul, the things that you're wrestling with, that isn't not give you permission to not, no, wrestle with it. But we often find ourselves around the same people with the same experience and the same resonance. Yep, life is, I am in debt. You're in debt. Oh my gosh, we're in debt. Let's hang out. And what's fascinating, they're all in a cave now. And David goes into this cave and he's with these guys. They're all in the same boat of life. Imagine what they talked about every night at the campfire. How'd you lose all your money? Why are you so angry? You know what? I had the same experience. Let me tell you my story. Imagine all the campfire conversations in that passage of what was going on. So caves are good because you find your tribe, but if you don't ever leave the cave, that's where you'll end your life. That's the tone of your life for the remainder of your life. And what we find through the rest of this story is David somehow gather these men and he gets them to leave the caves of Adullam. And I have a sense some of you are in the cave of Adullam and the time is done with the caves of Adullam. You're like, I like it here. I like my people. We can complain about the same thing. We can talk about the same thing. And we have the same story. And I'm telling you today, listen, that cave's going to kill you if you don't leave the cave. Now, do you think when they left the cave, they still had issues? Of course they did. But over the course of their life, these men turned into the most feared army unit of soldiers in all of Israel's history. And they went down in history as the mighty men of David. If you haven't read 2 Samuel chapter 23, you have not lived life yet. These are the most legendary men, battle warriors you will ever read about. Tonight, go read chapter 23 in 2 Samuel. These are the same men that were in a cave in debt, distressed, and discontented. How did David get them to leave the cave and to become the most feared men in all of Israel's history? He gave them purpose. He gave them a purpose. He believed in them. He gathered with them where they were at. I want to talk to leaders in this room. If you want to find people that will change the world with you, find the ones in debt. Find the one that are discontented and distressed. Find them. Meet them where they're at. Then give them purpose. Because when you give people purpose, it's amazing how quickly you leave your stories for a new story. And all of these men believed in the purposes of God over David's life. They said, we will give our life for this man to become king as God promised. So my message to you today is diverse. We just took one topic and hit it from multiple angles. And I'm going to put a period on that for now. And we may revisit it in the future. But I am here primarily to say this. I believe God wants us to leave the caves of Adullam, find purpose in what he is doing on the earth. So I want to be here to just say this. God is inviting you to participate in the purposes of what he is doing on earth. Why don't you stand?
Thanks for listening to today's talk. If you're interested in learning more about Studio here in Greenville, you can go check out our website, studiogreenville.com, and you can give us a follow on Instagram. Our handle is studio.greenville. Have a great week.